If you like the Talos of Tech podcast, you should check out the Transatlantic Cable podcast from Kaspersky Labs. They condense the most interesting info security and cybersecurity news into 20 minutes or less. Check it out and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Talos of Tech podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Today we have a very, very special guest I'm very excited to have on the Tech podcast. Mr. Ritchie, how's it going today?
Very good, thank you, sir. It's great to be here.
Good, good. I'm very excited to talk to you because you've been mentioned a lot in my comments section, particularly on Talos of Tech. A lot of people keep bringing you up, and you're like, Drew, you need to talk to Reen Ritchie. You need a collab. You got to meet him. You got to know him. And I kept going, I don't know who this is. Who is this guy? So finally, I looked you up and was like, okay, let's see if this guy lives up to the hype. And you do, sir. You absolutely do. Your channel's like binge worthy for me. Like, that's all I've been doing the last couple of weeks has been like watching more of your stuff and seeing more of the content you produce and your backstory. It's just been fascinating.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, for sure. So I just wanted to get that out of the way, that I'm a recent fan, but I'm definitely a fan.
No, likewise. I don't know. I've been watching you for a while. I've been really enjoying it.
Oh, really? I was going to ask you that. How long have you been watching my videos?
I got into YouTube embarrassingly late. Like, I would always do the prerequisite video review for any product because you had to, but like, I didn't really get YouTube culture. And then about a year ago, I started watching more and more, probably because I put the app on the Apple TV and then I would just go to it.
It's never too late. I mean, I just downloaded Reddit. We're all just catching up here. Literally right before the recording, I was like, okay, let me see how this works. But we can all play catch up a little bit. I still think the biggest days of YouTube have yet to come. So
good.
It's not too late. But clearly, I think a lot of our audiences are shared because a lot of us do, both of us do pretty good jobs at defending Apple when we think they need it or we think they deserve it, I'd say.
Or the way I look at it, and I think just based on what I've seen of you, I think it's similar, is that we're trying to defend Apple customers who sometimes told things that are not accurate and that can affect their buying decisions. Like somebody who needs a MacBook Pro gets a MacBook Air or a MacBook to review and is like, this is terrible. It's got no ports. Yeah. It's like, but nobody who wants it would ever buy it for that reason. And you're giving them bad information. You're harming them. And we just want to if this product is for you, here's what you need to know about it.
Right. And for me, it mostly came from a standpoint of like, well, clearly this company's doing something right. I mean, there's a lot of people reviewing them or critiquing them and saying like, this isn't a gaming computer. But it's like, it's selling and people are buying it. That means it's got something right. So we could take at it from more angles of, you know, before I was making videos, it felt like every computer was measured based upon how many games it could run. And that was it. Like, nothing else mattered. I was like, we could go a little deeper than that, you know.
No,
we could highlight that a tad more.
And also, like my big worry, like my secret worry, is that if you make everything into a disaster, when a real disaster comes, nobody's going to care anymore. It's going to be just more noise that's drowned out.
Sure, that's a really good point. And I think having channels that, I mean, I won't speak for you, but I definitely agree that I'm biased towards Apple, and I'm open about that. I think you're more fair and less biased than I am, but you're still get labeled, or sometimes people commenting immediately, people are like, he's paid by Apple, or they
oh god, I wish
Apple.
Can you imagine how rich we'd be?
I know, right? If Apple paid YouTubers, that's always the funniest one to me. It's like, you think Apple pays us for this stuff?
And it's like, they discovered YouTube, I think, like a year ago, right? Like, based on just who's covering their stuff. It's like they realized,
like, my god, we should probably like partner up with these people, I guess. I suppose it matters. Yeah. But I admit my bias, and I think because of that, the content you make and the videos you produce are actually more interesting, because it means that if Apple does make a mistake, or if another, let's say an Android company, makes something really decent, if it comes from someone with an Apple perspective, that I think just goes the extra mile, goes a little further. Well,
totally. And like, I don't know if you can tell me if the U.S. system is the same way, but there was this huge movement in the Canadian educational system when it was about things like thesis to state your bias, because they realized everybody is inherently biased. And if you say you're not, you're just lying. And that's not good for anybody. So state your bias and then people at least know where you're coming from.
We didn't have anything like that in the U.S., but we should. That's a great argument, because I think knowing someone's predetermined standards is an excellent way to start a debate, because you can, okay, I know what this person grew up with, and I knew what their default is, because I think to a certain extent we all grew up with certain products or certain brands as our standard, and it can be very natural for us to like default to those or go back to those.
Marvel Comics and Coke forever. DC Comics and Coke. Yeah. Terrible.
Right. That's my next channel we got to start. Marvel and Coke. It's going to be fantastic. But so moving into more tech stuff, that was enough creator talk about how we're so oppressed by YouTube. I wanted to talk more about Apple's road to success in India, because that's a huge market that's developing. And also, they're a very, very tiny piece of it right now. They're not thriving. They're not doing too hot, mostly because it's a very different demographic. You know, there's a lot of lower incomes and people who can't spend as much money for iPhones. And I was curious what your thoughts are. You may have talked about this more in the past, but I just kind of wanted to get it on record and document it, what you think of Apple making more affordable phones, or maybe even like some Android companies do. Is it a bad idea to make phones for a specific region? Like, just make a phone that's manufactured in that country for those people? Or do you think it would be smarter for them to make more affordable phones or make more budget phones, even if they are globally shipped? What's your thoughts on that?
So I have a lot of conflicting thoughts about this.
Me
right
too.
Now. So, on one hand, people will say, "Yo, I talk a lot about Apple and accessibility, mm-hmm. but when it comes to pricing, Apple is not that accessible. You have to have a certain amount of disposable income." And they slightly mm-hmm. play with that, like the new iPad, the 9.7-inch is the most affordable iPad ever. So they do, but generally, Apple is like a BMW or like a Porsche brand, where they're like, mm-hmm. you know, there are cars that are cheaper, we just don't know how to make them. That's been their standard line. It's like pleather. We're not sure what that is, and we don't know how to make a 2-liter engine. We don't know. And that's what their thing is. They're like, we make the premium end of stuff because we want to make super exciting stuff, and that's what allows us, affords us to do it. Mm-hmm. And their solution for BRIC countries, for emerging markets, has been, well, we'll sell you the older phones because by the time we get down to it, those are so cheap that it doesn't matter. But they've had a hard time in like Brazil and India and some countries where there are massive tariffs if you don't manufacture mm-hmm. them locally. And that's, mm-hmm. I think, where the point that Apple is at in India, where they've got to get, you know, the Foxconn plants into India and manufacturing. And I don't know that Apple has it in them to make. I think Apple should. I think as any market matures, that market naturally segments. And if you want to mm-hmm. grow, you have to start addressing the segments in that market. And like, I'm not saying you need a sports package and a utility package and a family package, but you do need to be more flexible, and you might mm-hmm. need to take a more regional approach.
Yeah, I think they could be onto something, because my contradicting thoughts come from Apple's goal has never been sell the most iPhones. Yes. It's always just to sell the best. And when you start saying, well, you got to make ones that are cheaper than all the others so that they can sell well here, it's kind of like, that doesn't line up with our ideology, though, because our goal is to just make best overall phone, not like, let's get our iPhones as cheap as possible so we can be the most popular phone brand. But at this point, you know, with the smartphone sales and decline and the market plateauing and the future being more on services, maybe it is time to start rethinking that ideology and start saying, well, at this point, the better argument to come at it with is we're getting iOS into as many hands as possible in the services. But I agree, it's tough. Like, I definitely don't like the idea that they're going to make some type of like ultra cheap but somewhat premium phone over in India, but they don't sell it here.
It's balsa wood, but it's okay.
Yeah, it's made of bamboo. But it'll sell well there, but it won't bring here. Like, I think they are launching certain phones specifically in, didn't they bring back the iPhone 6 for production in India or something?
They've done it all the time. Like, iPhone 4 came back for it. Like, after a while, God, they just restart it, and then people are all surprised again. That's what that market wants. And Google tried that with Android One, right? And then I know some phone companies, they made phones that had such, Microsoft did that with some Windows phone models. They had such little RAM that they weren't actually usable phones. And because we have a Windows site too, Windows Central, and when they covered them, they had to put the amount of RAM you needed in the description for the app to see if you could use it with the phone. I don't think that's good for anybody.
No, that should be a red flag, I think. That definitely sounds like something Apple wouldn't be okay with. But like, isn't Didn't they start developing light versions of apps because of phones like that? Like Facebook Lite and Messenger Lite?
Or you just get the BBM plan.
Yeah, right. Just everything's super cheap. But yeah, I'm curious to see how that's going to go. Because Apple's smart. You know, they're ready to plan for the future. They're always probably
and they're also
10
patient.
Steps ahead. That's true. That's true. And they're probably willing to let the stock go down pretty quick, even if it means long-term success.
Well, that was that Steve Jobs line. He's like, you take care of the top line and the bottom line takes care of itself. But the minute you worry about the bottom line, you forget the top line and you lose your company.
Oh, that's a good point, yeah. Trying to balance that, especially when I mean, just the sheer size of India is insanity.
Yes.
If you look at, it's like, okay, iPhones are the most popular in the U.S. It's like, well, that doesn't matter because in India there's like over a billion and growing even quicker. So how do you adapt to that with your previous ideology of just being the best overall phone and the money will come? You know, you'll decide the price on things.
And the ideologies are so different. Like in China, like the phone is part status symbol and part WeChat host. And then in India, like they just need a phone that has as many SIMs as possible in it. So you get like the MediaTek modem of your choice and then try to cram four SIM cards into it. And that's a very different business prop for a company like Apple. It's used to making like not like different models, but still one main phone.
Sure. And I mean, there's OG Apple fans that are even mad that nowadays there's like three iPhones coming out a year. They're like, oh, this is too complicated. And I'm like, I'm okay with it because I just want diversity, just different models for
different
people.
Where's the grid? There's supposed to be one laptop and one desktop for consumers and for pros.
Some people miss the old days where it was one iPhone, one size, that's it.
Yep, one carrier, like, one country.
No, thank you. Yeah, no, thank you. But China's a whole different battle because particularly when they have iPhone sales dropping so drastically, but it's in competition to companies where, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe like a large portion of their revenue doesn't come from sales profit. It comes from like ties to the Chinese government and then like selling data and stuff that way. It's like that's how you can get phones so cheap.
Yeah, it's amazing how you look at the market through different lenses. And you could look like Samsung and Microsoft and even Google had massive secondary revenue streams. So like Microsoft could sell phones for a decade without making any money. It didn't matter because they had Office bucks. And Samsung had like all the appliances. And that's like Palm and BlackBerry died because they had absolutely no other revenue streams. So if they couldn't sell phones, that was it for them. And Apple, they, I mean, they have Mac money, but a lot of that is iPhone money now. And Huawei makes massive telecommunications infrastructure. A lot of these companies are conglomerates, and it's very different business. And Apple is approaching it as a luxury brand because that's what's appealing to the market. But again, you have a massive amount of population who just wants a phone.
Right. And that, you're trying to find an ideology, particularly because of Apple's stance on privacy.
Yeah.
It, competing with these companies that are just like, oh, there you go. Have everything on there. We don't care. Take the phone.
But it's so weird
as long as it
because
gets the price lower.
The narratives never work. Like, I always like, I love Bloomberg and Wall Street Journal because like they find a narrative they think they understand and they push it just so adorably hard. But the information never fits. It's like iPhone is crashing in China, but the services revenue is way up. But wait, you just told me Chinese don't care about services because they all use WeChat. So why would the services revenue? Like, I would like you to actually do the rest of that story, please, at this point.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm with you. But you talked about earlier transitioning over from the China-India talk about them messing around with the budget iPads and kind of expanding more on that market. In fact, right before recording this video, you just published a video about the iPad Mini, which I'm really excited for and I have a lot of anticipation for. But I can't help but think about how the potential, which I'm excited for, of two new more affordable iPads coming out in the first half of 2019, whether it be in March or maybe they'll wait till Worldwide Developers Conference. Don't you feel like this is starting to really distort the iPad lineup? Like, the differences between the Pros and the smaller options are just getting further and further. We had Lightning, but now we've got USB-C on the high end, and now we got Apple Pencil first gen on some Pros, but not the new ones, and the second gen doesn't work with this one because that's got to be a magnetic side.
God,
but
I have a Logitech crayon.
It's getting
what
a little
could I
confusing.
Do with it?
Yeah, the crayons.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's this line of John Gruber's who writes Daring Fireball that I always steal, and he said a long time ago that iOS being light is what lets the Mac be so heavy. And I always thought there was a lot of wisdom in that. And I think that you know, Apple gets punched, they're getting punched over and over again about pricing. But at the same time that the iPad Pros are getting more expensive, the iPads are getting less expensive. And I think if they want to maintain mainstream appeal while they're sort of pushing that whole laptop alternative narrative, which is going to require more powerful, more expensive computers, especially if they want to do things like Face ID and put all the sensors in it and do all this next level things, by like mitigating that with a level of inexpensive iPads for people who just want to draw or just want to watch video. And I'm not minimizing that. I always feel like people think my workflow is the only real workflow.
I'm the superior pro.
I'm the real pro. It's like anyone who lives even a mile north of you is a northerner. Anyone who's me or more is a pro. So, but I think that that's what makes it accessible unless it be that mainstream device, even while they're pushing sort of the envelope on the top end.
So like talking more specifically, do you think it would be a bad idea to start trying to implement not all the features? Obviously, I agree with you on a lot of your videos, like Face ID, that's a pro feature, and we're pretty sure that adding Face ID to a device makes it cost an extra $500 at this point. It's very secure, but it's hard to get Face ID and cheap in the same sentence. So I'm not saying include Face ID on the new iPads, or I'm not saying include ProMotion. Those are expensive technologies. But do you think adopting like USB-C on those affordable iPads would be a smart move, or does that make it more confusing?
Yeah, I mean, I think Apple sort of got caught in the middle there, because the same team that made Lightning worked heavily to make USB-C, but they realized it wouldn't be ready in time. And they're like, we're not going to wait 2 more years to make an iPhone 5. Screw you guys and your consortium. Yeah. We're doing Lightning now. And then USB-C came out a couple of years later, and they're like, ah, we can't switch now because we just switched. People got so angry. Because we forget, like, we're nerds and we want our USB-C because everything is USB-C. But most people are like, I've bought 3 adapters, and if you make me buy those 3 adapters again, I'm going to cut you. Because they don't have anything else. They don't care. Their desktop computer is 8 years old and it's running Windows ME, and they're fine. Don't care. So I think like if Apple could do it all over again, they would have pushed to get USB-C ready faster. And I say that as someone who's fully expecting the minute Apple switches to USB-C for the consortium to announce USB-C Mini, and we just want to lose my crap all over again. I think it will behoove them at this point to move everything to USB-C, just because it will drastically simplify the lineup for people.
I agree. I think it's a big mess right now, because essentially you're screwed either way. Like, they can keep Lightning, and then people are like, well, that doesn't line up with my my MacBook Pro chargers or my new iPad Pro chargers. But at the same time, there's this vast history now, like you said, ever since the iPhone 5 that's used to Lightning with all those accessories. So
where does this cable go? Just tell me, where does this cable go?
Problem solved. Put Lightning on one end, USB-C on the other. We'll just have both.
But it's like, it's so nuts. I don't understand. Like, I understand it's simple. Like, it looks simple because you have one connector, but is it USB-C PD or is it not? Is it Thunderbolt 3 or is it not? And you look at this cable and people plug it in and it doesn't work. And like, I can't explain to my father what a Thunderbolt 3 cable is compared to a USB-C cable. I've tried.
Right. I've even had my sister critique me. It was like, why did they call it Thunderbolt 3 if Lightning came first? That's because Thunderbolt comes after Lightning.
Yeah.
No, wait. Thunder comes after.
Like, the MacBook is still USB-C, but it's not Thunderbolt 3. But the iBook Air is Thunderbolt 3. And how is a normal person supposed to understand all this? And why do the cables look the same?
Right. It looks incredibly similar. And it's one of the reasons they have to keep around traditional USB-A ports. Yeah. On things like the iMac Pro and the Mac Mini, it kind of makes me wonder, why not just start including, maybe they're not Thunderbolt 3 USB-C ports, but like low power USB-C ports. That way we can connect accessories that don't necessarily need all the power of Thunderbolt 3, but then we're not forced to use old fashioned, stupidly irreversible but symmetrical USB-A cables. Like, it's this weird middle ground right now, and I'm most upset and annoyed that I still have to use Lightning to charge my Mac accessories.
I know.
That feels the most backwards.
I know.
Of all.
It's terrible. In my world, you would just include an adapter in every box. Like, it comes with USB-C, and there's a USB-A adapter that you can put on the end in every box. But for Apple spends so much money on, like, the bezels for the iPhone 5. Like, billions of dollars to make a camphored edge that really doesn't matter to anybody but Johnny Ive, but then they won't put the 2-cent adapter in the box. And it just...
That's too much. they can't push that.
Take some of that camphoring money, put it...
I don't know either. But in regards to the iPhones as well, with the same topic,
yeah,
I also think it's a big they're in a stuck place. But do you think, as probably often most of our commenters bring this up, do you think the reasoning for keeping Lightning is that they make a tad bit of more money off of that opposed to switching to USB-C, or is there a bigger plan in the works?
No, like, I think it's around, like, when you look at the amount of money they make off MFI, it's like a rounding error. Like, I think it's probably in Tim Cook's office sofa. He could put his hand in there and pull out as much money as they make off the license. It's control. Control is one thing. Like, they have really stringent controls, and people knock them for it, and they write, like, nasty articles about how Apple's real super controlling. Like, with HomeKit, it was like a year of accessory makers are complaining, Apple's too stringent with HomeKit, the requirements are too high, and then the next year, people are hacking cars and houses and turning on IP cameras. Yeah, yeah. And you're like, I'm glad they took the year to make secure Wi-Fi, because none of the rest of you idiots would do it. So I think the security, like the quality control, is important, but I think they're just trying to guess if there's this whole move towards portless. Like, we've already seen, I think it was Xiaomi or somebody else, and there's rumors that Google's Pixel 2 was going to have a prototype that, well, they did have a prototype with no ports, but they couldn't get remote restore working, and that's like huge. Like, an Apple Watch, if it fails, you as a consumer, you can't do anything. If you get a bad update, you can't plug it in and DFU it and fix it. You've got to take it to an Apple store.
Sure.
And for a phone, that's your life. It's dependent on that. So and I'm pretty sure that whatever company is going to ship that phone does not have remote restore enabled in the slightest. That's going to be your problem. No.
Right.
And Apple TV has just remote restore, a video, but it's for nerds. So.
Yeah, and that's kind of them experimenting. It's not as major.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a widespread reported problem that my Apple TV is stuck in a boot loop. You know, I don't hear that too much. I was trying to load Minecraft, but Microsoft removed it already. it's in a boot loop. I need to reset. But yeah, I think they're definitely, knowing Apple and how much they hate cables and wires, they're pushing that. And yeah, and anytime someone brings up they make so much money off Lightning, I always go, yeah, what was the last pair of like third party Lightning accessories you bought? What was the last pair of headphones that you bought for Lightning?
Find it on this income statement. They have quarterly results. Find me the Lightning breakout.
Yeah. We make billions from the Lightning port. So many, I don't know, Zoom microphone attachments people do on the bottom.
No, it's control. Yeah, it's not money. It's control for them. That's they'll spend a lot of money to maintain control.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think, let's say they fix the factory reset problems or they get iOS perfectly stable. They're never worried about those hard resets or anything like that. Do you think they would remove it, knowing full well the backlash they would get from consumers and potentially the hit in sales? Or is Apple still on that boat of, this is the perfect vision, we're acting for the future, we're going to stick with it?
You know, you just made me wish. I would love to see Phil Schiller come out on stage and say, we're removing the port, but we're giving you the 3.5 millimeter jack back. And just watch people's faces just contort and try to understand.
Well, it could be like an iPod Shuffle and they'll charge through the headphone jack.
Yeah.
You remember that?
that was great.
I still have one of those cables on my wall. It's like the most hypocritical cable I've ever seen. It's a USB-A to headphone jack cable. And I'm like, this is so useless now. Like, I can't plug this into anything now. But, you're right, though. Watching them on stage try to explain people as to why the port's gone is going to be even more challenging. With the headphone jack, at least they could be like, this is old. You know, this is 100 years
but
old.
But also, like, you've probably had this too, but I had phones without headphone jacks for years. My original Android dream, I think, was like the T1, the G1 on T-Mobile in the U.S. That didn't have a headphone jack. And my HTC, all my HTC Windows phones didn't have headphone jacks. And it's not a big brouhaha. It's like, this is annoying.
I'm a little after that. My first phone was an iPhone 5.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, there's no room for the headphone jack. They got to remove it on the next one. And if people scroll back, like, one day I'll release these. Right now they're too embarrassing. But I have old videos of me hypothesizing, like, I don't think the iPhone 6 is going to have a headphone jack because they can't get it any thinner. And then it comes out, obviously. But I was prepping for that for years.
They were going to do it.
Like, my first iPhone.
They wanted to remove it for years, and they just never had an excuse. And then finally they're like, well, we could stick a second camera in here and move down the haptic engine. And, oh, sorry, no more room.
That's a good reason. Or the AirPods narrative. It's like, well, we finally figured out wireless. It's good enough.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a horse before your cart type argument. A lot of people right now are suggesting well, don't remove the port until they figure out some type of over-the-air charging. Not anything too drastic, like maybe a foot away, maybe 2 feet away. But as soon as you figure out that side of wireless, then it's okay to remove the charge port. Or are they going to remove it in hope that that will rush the technology to be done quicker? Because it's like, oh, crap, a major phone just removed the port. We better get good at this wireless power transfer.
My favorite is people, because they'll be like, "Why? Where's my damn USB quick charge?" And then, why is the phone not wireless? Oh, I'm getting rid of the quick. Now it's charging slowly, but it's better because it's wireless. It wasn't really the time; it was the technology. I just want the most advanced thing. I don't care how slow it is.
Right. Well, I've always said Apple's always prioritized convenience over performance, and we know that wireless is always going to be a little bit slower than wired, but. If it gets to that point where it's more convenient, like my go-to is always the Wi-Fi comparison.
Yeah.
Wi-Fi slower than Ethernet, but that didn't stop us from making devices without Ethernet because it's more convenient. So we'll take the hit.
And Jobs could make Phil Schiller jump off the stage, you know, carrying a laptop. Everybody wins.
Right. Everybody wins. Okay. Transitioning a little bit in regards to future iPhones and what they could have. I had to ask about the notch versus punch hole display question that's going around right now. Where do you stand on that? Because I haven't seen you talk too much about it, but how do you feel about in 2019 there's so many phones that are like, this isn't a notch, this is a camera hole. Do you like that trend? Do you want to see Apple move towards that?
I don't like any of them, but I don't mind any of them. Like the notch to me is visually abhorrent, but it's there, so I've gotten used to it. And the holes, it's the same thing. It's like, maybe they shouldn't be in the corners so much. I'm not sure. Maybe try one centered.
I'm with you there.
But Apple has a lot more going on in that notch than a lot of other phones do. Most of them just have one, maybe two selfie cameras, where Apple has like the dot projector, the infrared, all that stuff.
Sure.
And like an array of eight holes would look like spider eyes, and that might creep me out. So,
right. Well, I hope it's true that they're working on ways to minimize that notch, given how quickly the competition's catching up, whether they have a chin or not. Everyone's noticing that that's like a design. It's an irregularity. It's still a cutout. They got to tackle that.
They should just put it. I'm waiting for like someone in China to put it in the chin, and then you just got to look down at your phone a lot. You know,
the nostril cam.
Yeah, just put the cam in the chin. You got the room.
I've seen that suggested a lot, and I'm not an engineer, so I can't say for certain. I know why they can't do it, but
I think the display drivers
doesn't have something.
There.
Yeah, I was going to say it has something to do with, like, most phones have chins because that's where the display ribbon attaches, and maybe that takes up too much space, but you're right. It's bizarre that no one's done that.
Because they had that laptop, remember they put the camera in the keyboard or
something?
Yeah,
yeah. Right, it, like, stuck out of the F5 key or something. Or something like that. I guess you couldn't do that on a MacBook, it'd be a touch bar. But... yeah, I don't know. I have seen a lot of leakers saying that Apple's going to move to that camera hole technology, not this year, but next year. And I'm fine with it, but I definitely see it as one of those cheap ways for a company to say, look, improvement, when in reality it's like, well, your display replacement's going to be double the price now because we squished those pixels behind the cameras. So
funny. I look at it, remember the early Trios, the Palm Trios, like the 600, 650, mm-hmm. they all had these huge antennas sticking out of them. And then they got to the Palm 680 and there was no more antenna. And that's how I feel about the notch. It's like, we want the technology, but we can't hide it yet. And eventually we'll get to a point where we can hide it, and then we'll have both.
Yeah. that's a really good comparison. It's funny, though, that like we were okay with phones being that clunky and having all these extensions on, and then... nowadays it's like, oh, but this one has an 86.4% screen to body ratio. Like, we can't have anything now. We got to remove all distractions. There's phones removing buttons now. What's the
naked glass?
I don't know how that.
Well, soon we'll have the glasses, and then we won't need a phone. We'll just have an imaginary AR phone in our hand. And
there you go.
It'll have nothing.
Do you see? I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to talk about the AR glasses. Do you see that as something coming out? In recent, or is that more of a distant invention? In recent future, will it be dropping?
I don't think they timeline that stuff. I think they just, because they have they basically go through this process where they prototype all these, cause, and they have like these fancy machines and all this production equipment, and they build them and they build them and they build them. And some things like the TV set, they're like, this is a 6% margin business. We don't know how to make money in this. We'll keep it in the lab unless Johnny wants to watch the Super Bowl on it. That's like basically all we'll do with it. And other products they go to market with, and there's a ton of products they've never shipped. And this could be one of them, but I think just how Apple's put so much effort into AR and using, like even Memoji, yes, it's cute, but it also gets a ton of people to use AR and not be creeped out by face detection, which if you just like dropped a naked product on them, like the Microsoft did, you might be like, oh, it's looking at my face. This is creepy. I don't understand what's happening. I walked into a wall. I hate everything. But like, oh, this is Memoji. It's cute. And then you're used to it. Right. And, oh, you play an AR game. And then as it goes from your phone to your glasses, it just seems much more natural.
That's interesting that you bring somewhat possibility to like, well, maybe there was more thought process behind Memoji than just but we're cute, you know, like I never thought of it that way, that it was like trying to make augmented reality more acceptable.
Yeah, they're boiling our
mainstream
water.
Culture. Yeah. Right. Well, especially when you see in Worldwide Developers Conference how much they push AR apps.
Yeah.
And you know how many people actually use those in the real world. It's like,
yeah,
I'm like gonna get that new iPad because there's I'm going to get that new iPad so I can play with Legos.
Yep.
That looks so exciting. I'm so ready. But, yeah, I'm really interested in that because I think that's probably the next big technology release that I think there's a lot of evidence towards, because I get that comment. You probably get this comment a lot. Is like, okay, the smartphone era is ending. It's not that exciting. We're getting wearables here and there. It's all accessories. But what's the next big thing? You know, what's the next big product release? Mine is always the glasses, because I can see their excitement towards it and they're pushing it. And I think that would honestly change almost every aspect of the Apple ecosystem.
Yeah, it's like this gradual thing where we're becoming bionic, but first it was in our it was on our laps, and then it was in our hands. Now it's in our on our wrists and in our ears,
right.
And it'll be on our faces. And one day it'll be internal, but that's like a long road, and you got to build out so much stuff that you've got to just you got to do the external stuff as much as possible first.
Well, I think that a lot of people ask about that. It's like, Drew, when's the tech embedded in your body going to start coming out? And I always say, I bet that's going to be a bigger legal battle than it is a technological battle. Like trying to get the government, like, hey, come to an Apple store and have a quick surgery with your brain opening up. It'll be really easy. Yeah.
I won't even get LASIK done, so I'm going to be the last person to get the Apple.
Yeah. That's quickly when I'm going to become the grandpa of the tech industry, is when they start asking to like surgically implant stuff, and I'll be like, no, thank you.
And you know, the Rev A board will be buggy, and then people will be walking around with glitchy implants.
This is why they need a charge port installed, so you can hard reset when you need to.
Like it's a Matrix BNC connector.
Yeah, right. This might feel a little weird, you know? It's like 1 foot rod going up your head.
Did you DFU grandma? Leave her alone.
Oh, man. Like, in regards to smartphones, like, a lot of people keep talking about the death of them or how they're dying. But the reality is they're not dying. They're just – we're finding, I think, a new average.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that? Like it's not that people aren't going to stop using them. I personally think we're still in the smartphone era. I just think the heyday or the exciting part of it's coming to an end. Like, how do you visualize a smartphone to look in about like 10 years from now? What would be your vision in another decade, given we've had iPhones for about 10 years?
So my guess, and it's complete guess, is that we'll have a small like mother box or marble or something that we keep on us.
Okay.
And that'll do local authentication and cloud connection. And then everything else will be handled opportunistically. Like any piece of glass can become a surface, but also AR will just pop up interface wherever or whenever you need it. So it'll mostly be what's the word? An ephemeral experience where you look at the wall, there's the screen giving you all your information. You look down at your desk, there's the screen giving you information, and all you have is that one little connection.
So when you say marble, do you literally mean an actual marble, or
like a little small round or square pocketable thing that just handles all the authentication and the connection?
The A23 chip is in there, just handling everything.
That's like the modem and the processor.
I could see it being like a ring.
Yeah, you know, I mean, anything
or something
that
easy.
Fits. And then eventually they'll go inside.
That's interesting. Right, and then it's in you. Like, would that be like one universal, like for all your Mac OS stuff, or will there even be a difference at that point? See, that's how I would envision, like, 50 years from now. But do you think there would be that kind of tech ready in 10 years?
I think, I mean, like, you'd have, like, endpoints. And again, it'd be like, you know, this is Drew. And I know what Drew's environment is. So Drew sits down, and we have this piece of, like, Drew goes to visit, whatever. He sits down, goes to the office space. Mm-hmm. The screen comes on, and it's all your stuff. You get up, you have a piece of glass in your hand, and it's your stuff. Or you're just looking at walls, and it's your stuff. And it can handle all that because the interface has become this opportunistic thing.
That would be really interesting. I didn't imagine it that far. I thought you'd say something boring like thinner bezels. But no, you had an actual. You have an
we have
actual
always been at war with bezels.
Yeah, one day we'll win. But you had that really interesting envision of just the one central point, and it just kind of saves your memory from device to device, which I think is fascinating.
That's
I would use that.
That's the reason why I think the privacy laws are so important, because one day all the stuff we're arguing about on our phone is going to be first connected to our brains and then in our brains. And if people are free to rummage around on it in our phone now, they're going to be rummaging around inside it in our brains fairly soon.
Yeah.
So I'd love to get that settled while it's still external.
Right. It's a little private segue for them. It's like, oh, now the tech's going in. It's interesting. You also have that same concern of like technology being integrated into our minds very quick. Yeah. I don't think too much about that because I'm always like, neural pathways are still such a mystery. How could companies can't even release air power? How would we figure that out?
I mean, that's true, but like Elon's trying, right? And even they could succeed accidentally.
Elon scares me sometimes with the kind of stuff he pitches. His sometimes he'll say things like AI is more dangerous than nuclear warfare.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm like, man, because that's pretty bad. That can like wipe out humanity. But really, a bigger threat than that. I guess I don't see it like in present time, but you guys are thinking of the long term probably more than I am.
Well, it's just it's that classic, like there's these three outcomes, right? One is that we create AI and it doesn't care about us. It's like the conquistador to the anthill. It just keeps walking as it goes to conquer the universe.
Like Bixby.
Yeah. And the other thing is that we're in its way. Like we're in its way, so it stomps on us. Or what was Elon? I think Elon's example was it tears the planet in half to get better access to the geothermal power supply, and it's just like, oh, it's not inhabitable anymore. Oops. And so Elon's thing was like you put it in your mind, you become codependent, and that way they can't hurt us.
Mm. Wow, that's a fascinating. I never even thought of it that way. But yeah, like that's a very like, well, they could tell us, you know, where the greatest burger joints are, or it could be the Matrix.
Yeah.
Those are our two hypotheticals. It's kind of similar to, like, if alien life discovered Earth.
Yeah.
Kind of the similar outcomes, you know? Like, they're here to help or destroy.
Yeah, being discovered has historically never done well for anybody.
That's true. That's an important thing to remember. Okay. Oh my God! I'm just realizing the kind of questions I want to ask you. But this is a tech podcast. On top of anyway, let's find something more nerdy we can discuss.
Sure.
Oh yeah, our ARM processors.
Yep.
I loved your video about the ARM MacBook.
Thank you.
The potential of Apple, like, and they've been experimenting with it for a very long time. Yeah. I was going to ask you more specifically, what order would you put the Apple ecosystem right now, as if they started doing ARM CPUs on Macintoshes, what would they start with and what would they end with? What's like the most difficult one to tackle and probably the first one to tackle?
So my understanding just is that they were tackling MacBook Air, MacBook style devices, and they had them that ran ARM and they had them that ran even iOS. Because iOS was already running on ARM, so why not? Like, why not have an iOS? You can make an iPad, why can't you make a clamshell of the same sort of thing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So all of those things are sitting in the lab. And I think that makes sense for a couple of reasons. One is that they are light, and iOS is currently a fairly light operating system. It doesn't have the sort of things that a Mac Pro user would probably, like, where are my CUDA cores? I don't know where my CUDA cores are. Give me my CUDA cores.
Right, right.
So it makes a lot of sense for me for them to start with a consumer device on one end.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a Mac, I don't know, because a Mac Mini it doesn't sell that much. But like a Mac Mini would probably be an interesting other project, because then people could sort of do with it what they wanted. It could be that little hobbyist ARM Mac that you could, you know, deck out to do sort of like music or entertainment or video. And then you just massively paralyze the ARM cores instead of growing them super big and super hot like Intel. You just put like 10 of them in a row.
Right. So you would say like MacBook, like I assume when you say MacBook, you mean like start with something like the 12-inch MacBook.
Yeah.
Like a really portable, light one. And then would you say like move it to the MacBook Air and then the Pro? Or yeah, kind of do it all at the same time?
I mean, historically, they've done one at a time. And I think they have limited bandwidth. We've seen that with the Mac lineup over the last few years, is that they can do maybe three.
Yeah.
If they push it, they can do maybe three Macs a year. And people often don't understand that. It's like, well, Intel announced a new processor. Why isn't it in my Mac? It's like, well, no, they announced a new model. They haven't shipped those chips yet. And once they ship them, you've got to do power nap. You've got to do all these different things. And that'll take. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you've got, even if you have an ARM Mac chip, you've got to make it do everything. Like, it's got to do all the security work. And that's different from a laptop than it is from a desktop. And that's team does not have that much bandwidth. So I would envision maybe a MacBook Air would come out first. And then maybe that'd be like 9 months, and then we'd see two more. And then the next year, we'd see like three more. And then we'd have the line sort of transitioned over 2 years.
And do you think their end goal is to have complete control over the CPU in the Mac market? Like even the iMac Pros and the Mac Pros, the powerhouses, they want to have all of those covered?
Yeah, I mean, I've been interested in seeing what an AMD Mac would look like for years, just because, well, especially recently, because Threadripper's been so interesting. But I think ultimately Apple's been so hurt. Like, you just look at a lot of the problems that exist, like the thermal limits of the current devices. Those don't really exist on 10 nanometers. Like, if Intel had gotten to 10 nanometers even like a year after they said they would, none of these problems would exist. And now Apple's but they couldn't do it. So now they're adding more cores because they can't handle smaller die sizes. And now Apple's got this computer that was built for 7 nanometers, having to host bigger 14 nanometer chips than they ever intended. Right. And like, I think their thing is like, they'll never say this. They are exceedingly polite about Intel to the point that it's borderline annoying. But I think that they never want to be screwed this badly again.
No, I think that would be a smart way to handle it. What would be slightly different, though, about them boosting their silicon business is, like, right now we have basically, like, two different levels of chips. Like, you have your standard A-series chip, and then you have your A-blank-X coming out a year. You know, we have the iPhone chip, which is usually the fastest of the year, and then it's shortly beaten out by the X version, which comes out with the iPad of that similar year. It's typically the way things go. But with the Mac lineup, they're so diverse. They're so drastically all over the place. Like, you have 12-inch MacBooks with really, really low power cores, but at the same time, if Apple wants to control, like, the cores that go in the iMac Pro and the Mac Pro, they're going to have a very wide selection, right?
Yeah, like you go from Core M, and no one believes they're rebranding. They're still Core M, all the way up to like Xeon, and you've got Coffee Lake Refresh, all the way down to Skylake on the Xeon still. And I think you can flip it. Like right now, they're basically using ARM coprocessors to fix Intel. Like the T2 doesn't just do security; it also does the video encoding because the Intel chips don't video encode well enough, which is a bizarre world to be in. Like we've got an iPad
in this
chip
hybrid stage.
Yeah, and we could flip that. Like we could have the base chip being ARM and have on the high end have an Intel or an AMD coprocessor that handles like the bigger, more pro needs for a while until Apple scales up their ARM-based silicon.
Hmm. Yeah, that would be interesting to see because, like, I just don't see, like, I see them releasing basically two new cores a year. And to go from that between having the options of 12-inch MacBook to iMac to higher-end iMac to iMac Pro to Mac Pro, it's going to be a lot for them to tackle. But I really hope they can do it because they've shown us, in the iOS industry at least, or in the mobile industry, that they can really tackle that well.
It could be funny, I think. Like one core in the MacBook, two cores in the MacBook Pro, four cores in the iMac, eight cores in the Mac Pro.
Oh, just okay, I see what you're saying. So like this year we have let's say the first year they do it, they call it like the M1. So there's an M1 CPU that's really quick and fast in the MacBook Air. But then for the new iMac Pro, it has four M1s, you know, all kind of tethered together.
It's just massive scaling.
That would be a simple way. Yeah, essentially. That would be interesting. But in regards to the modular Mac Pro, do you have any hype or expectations to that? Or does that look like a train wreck waiting to derail?
I mean, it's hard. Like they obviously took like many, many wrong turns with the Mac lineup over the last few years.
Yes.
You know, with the the thermal corner that they painted themselves into with the Mac Pro, but also just everything has seemed like a little wonky. But I do think that now they have that Pro work. Like for me, the saving grace is that Pro workflow team that's sitting there with the engineers saying, no, fix this. Mm-hmm. No, we need that. No. And these are like amazing people. These are songwriters and videographers and video editors and like across developers, all these things saying, we need this. We need that. Why is this dialogue box taking too long to pop up in Final Cut Pro? You can fix that too. And they're really like throwing feedback at them. And I think that is what's going to help them sort of get on track with the modular Mac Pro. I mean, my dream is like a cheese grater for the new generation. I don't know if we'll go that far, but I hope
a little smaller.
Yeah, well, a little smaller, but also like with the PCIe cards and like the things that we need to.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like if you're buying it and you're going to use it in your studio or your office, whatever, for years, like you should be able to pull things out, push things back in, and not a lot of people buy it. If you look at Apple sales, it's almost all MacBooks and then iMac and then very small Mac Mini and Mac Pro. But it's like that super card. It's the aspirational product. And it's from there that a lot of new technologies radiate out. So I think they really have to nail it.
Yeah, I agree. I hope they have like the techie professional of Gordon Ramsay in there who's just kind of like slamming them. Everyone's like, I need this in the next Mac Pro.
No, you donkey, you've ruined it.
Right. I hope to see that. But yeah, I think the pressure is definitely on for this next one, given how much disappointment and negative feedback the trash can got. It's just funny that they got that much. there was a one Apple keynote. I forget which one it was. I think it was when they redesigned all of macOS and they set it to. I think it was Yosemite. Was when they kind of gave it the iOS 7 treatment. You know, they like redesigned the layout for everything. There is a line that Craig Federighi gave, and I could be wrong, but was he unintentionally docking the Mac Pro when he was like, you have no idea how much effort we put into the trash can when he was showcasing this? He was like, we put so much effort into this, and I was like, was that a subtle wink? I can't tell.
You never can tell because he'll take swipes at the marketing team all the time. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Our crack marketing
funny.
Team.
I wish. Yeah, exactly. macOS weed.
I guess they have friends who look like this. None of my friends look like this.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm interested in what they do for the modular one. Don't you think with a lot of the driver, I guess you could call it arrogance from both Mac and from NVIDIA, are they going to not play well with what does modular Mac Pro really mean? You know, is that actually upgradable or...
Well, I mean, it'll run any AMD card you want. Is that like...
Yeah, right. AMD, any card you can think of. But I feel like there's a ton of people out there that are building this anticipation for like, oh, it's modular. That means it'll support... It'll just be a gaming PC that ships with macOS, essentially.
No, I mean...
I don't think it'll be that simple.
The NVIDIA thing is hard because they are still super angry that NVIDIA didn't take responsibility for the issues that they had the last time they used NVIDIA. And then Apple wants to just say, give us the cards and we'll write to the metal. And NVIDIA's like, no, you'll write to NVIDIA and we'll handle the rest. And Apple's like, that's not how we do things. And NVIDIA's like, well, that's not how we... And they're both so successful in their own areas that they don't have to give. They're both arrogant and proudful and... They feel like the other one should bend, and we're stuck. Like we pay the price because they both think they have the best way of doing things.
Right. Well, Apple iPads bend, so there's that. They won't bend on the GPU support. it's weird because a lot of people will backtrack and not really know who to blame when it comes to like Adobe professionals who love using the suite of Adobe products. Yeah. They're like, well, this works better with NVIDIA cards, and I hate Apple because they don't use NVIDIA cards. But it's like, well, that resulted in, I don't know. Are you still using Adobe?
I use both because I've been using Photoshop forever, and it's like just muscle memory. Okay. But once I got used to Final Cut Pro, I did video editing on a video toaster, and then I didn't do it for years. And then when I came back, I was just like, someone showed me how fast Final Cut Pro was compared to Premiere. And I just couldn't use Premiere after that.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like writing to the metal is just so good for performance.
Right.
And Apple's entire interface, everything about the Mac is designed to run on metal now. And they really want that performance. And they don't want this weird janky, not that it'd be janky, but they don't want to have to NVIDIA brokering everything. But you're right. Like, for Adobe, just always blame Adobe. They made Flash interfaces. They're unforgivable.
Yeah.
you can never fix that. But for other stuff, you've got to blame both. I mean, the internet's not good with multiple truths or multiple blames. And we really have to do, like, you can have multiple people being wrong. It's really okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. No, that's a great point. I think people need to understand that. I had to quit Adobe because I'd used them for years. I was a very long-term, like, I signed up for Creative Cloud back when I was a student so I could get the cheaper deals.
Yeah.
And then used them up until I wasn't a student anymore. And then they started upping their rates, and I started getting to the point where I was like, what exactly am I paying for here? Because you say blame Adobe, I will, because I just ran into the experience of updates crashing and breaking things, yeah. and there were tons of them. Felt like every day they were dropping a new update, and then it would remove stuff I was used to using. And I was like, okay, I can't do this anymore. And you're right, the speed doesn't lie when it comes to Final Cut. And for video editors, you know, we'll put up with a certain amount of patience, but it gets to a certain point when we're like, I'm sorry, it's too dang fast with that metal support. And
it's the cockamamie licensing, too. Like, I worked in design for a long time. I was like, this was an office job. I worked in an enterprise software company.
Yeah, yeah.
And I couldn't use the Adobe thing that they bought it for me. They installed it. It wouldn't work. I called tech support. They bumped me up to higher level tech support. They're like, go click on the leaf on our startup screen. I'm like, what, really? Click on the leaf. And that shows, like, this whole second box. Like, type these code words into this box. I'm like, there you go. We've unlocked the product for you. Like, but I bought it. Like, why do I have to do this to unlock it?
These cheat codes within Adobe. You can unlock them.
This is not the experience I want.
No. That's why I'm very excited because of – well, I think Apple's narrowed that video professional market well because of Final Cut and because other companies out there like Microsoft who develop Windows, they don't really have that pro apps focus I think that Apple does, which just results in, like, well, with Windows 10 you can use Adobe or DaVinci or you can use other things, but none of them are quite going to match that optimization you're going to get, and that makes it really hard to switch for most people out there.
Well, for me, it was like, again, I hadn't edited video in, like, not seriously in a decade. And we were in New York and we did a 3-camera shoot, and the person who was supposed to edit it wasn't there. So they're like, you edited video, you can do this. I'm like, I edited video 10 years ago. I can't do this. Yeah. So they put me on the phone with the video editor, and they said, oh, it's no problem. You just pick the clips and say, make multicam clip. And then you cut between them with the one. And it took me 5 minutes to learn how to do it, and then maybe 20 minutes to do the edit. And if I had to do that in Premiere, I would still be there. Like, 4 years later, trying to figure out how to do a multicam edit. And just speed to usable work in Final Cut was so much faster.
Mm-hmm. You'd also still be there because it'd be exporting for another 10 years after that.
We tried to do a 4K podcast there, and it took 2 days to render on an iMac. And
oh, my God.
I think like a day and a half to upload.
2 days?
Yeah.
Oh, I would give up at that point.
Yeah.
That's a new level of patience.
And I don't think anybody watched it in 4K anyway, so it was a great experiment.
Yeah. Video resolutions is a difficult battle for a lot of creators right now because it's like 4K is just so accessible and so easy, but at the same time, there's this 1080p sweet spot mostly because of mobile viewers. And I always tell people, like, if you're just starting out on YouTube or you just started growing your channel, don't feel like you have to do 4K. It's not like this required standard we're all on. It is totally there for the people who are like, ooh, if I watch this on my 4K smart TV, I can load it and it'll look extra. But that's such a small percentage. So even though I always record in 4K and I always post to 4K, it's always just like, well, we're covered. You know, like, for the people who want that resolution, it's there. But by all means, 1080p is probably the...
And YouTube is going to stick it at 360p anyway, so I mean, I don't know.
Right. My God. What a dumpster fire this has been this week.
That's so great.
Oh, it was honestly just... it was degrading to watch my... I always shoot my videos at 4K at 60 frames a second, and I post it, and they just skin it and leave it at 360 up there, and then don't touch it. Oh, it was driving me nuts.
Why is this in 360? Every comment, every time. Why is this in 360? Why is this in 360?
Right. Did you have a problem, like, even if I pinned my comment and said, hey, guys, YouTube's broken, it's 360p, but it's full res at Twitch, click on this link. Even that, people would...
Nobody reads the comments. They just leave them.
People wouldn't read the first comment on the video. Nope. It's pinned. at the top, and they were still like, "Why is it three stick?" Oh, I was close to banning that word, just not allowing it in the comment section. You can't write the word 360p.
Why is it 361p? Why is it 361p?
Right. It's like, well, these people are capable of writing, so I assume that means reading. But I don't know. Maybe I'm assuming too much. Okay. So last topic before we wrap things up today. There was a couple more rumors that were reported this morning / yesterday about Apple wanting to release over-ear headphones, possibly the last half of 2019. Would you be interested in that, and do you think that's a good idea?
I like what Apple's doing with audio technology. Like, they built this whole lab, and they do all these cool things. Like, they have a team that tries to figure out with AI that if you put your phone here versus here, how they can direct the sound waves to make sure you always hear people clear. And that team was, like, working on the HomePod, and they've been working on AirPods. And at this point, I'm like, just let that team do whatever they want, because maybe I'll buy them, maybe I don't, but... Apple was the iPod, the music company that for years made the crappiest speakers in the world.
Right.
Like, they were low and they were tinny, and I complain about them every year. And then all of a sudden they're like, no, now it's wide stereo and we're doing computational audio. And I'm like, if you need to make those speakers that I keep getting better and better audio from everything, then you and it's obviously fashionable, right? Because Microsoft is making them, Sonos is making them. I'm guessing Nintendo is going to make them. Or I joked yesterday, maybe Shake Shack is going to have their own headphones soon.
The Mario headphones.
So I'd like to see, like, I don't know if they'll succeed or like win or lose in the market, but I'd like to see what Apple can do with them.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's at least worth entering to experiment with, but it could very easily, I imagine, knowing Apple's pricing, particularly on the HomePod. I could see it being another HomePod repeat. You know, it's like, this sounds good, but then they're going to limit it like a handful of ways. Like, it's kind of confusing to know where they would head with it, because the HomePod doesn't support Bluetooth. You know, it's AirPlay and Wi-Fi only, but the AirPods do. So where do you think the Pro headphones would go?
I think they'll – so, I mean, this seems like a law, is that they'll be $100 more than we want, and they'll be missing a key feature that Twitter wants. Like, well, it doesn't matter, like, really if everybody knows about the feature, but it'll miss, like, one feature that Twitter really wants. Like, they won't be noise canceling, or there'll be only noise canceling. Like, there'll be one thing that just drives people crazy. And I think they actually have a committee that sits down and figures out what that one thing has to be, and then makes sure that's in the product design.
I love that idea. Yeah, I love your idea of the law. Like, if an Apple product comes out, it has to abide by these two or these three things. Because it seems like any Apple product comes out can't just be good. It has to be good at a couple things and then severely controversial over one decision. And for the sake of marketing, for some reason, they have to find that one thing. It's like, what will make this decisive enough that there will be a good number of people that defend it and a good number who don't? You know, where's that's that perfect middle ground?
Yeah. No, I mean, my understanding with the HomePod thing, I don't know this for 100% sure, but my understanding was the fear was if they put Bluetooth on it at launch, every reviewer, because reviewers aren't always the most, what's the right word for it, energetic of people, would just put a bunch of speakers side by side, throw Bluetooth to them and say, oh, the HomePod sounds like crap because it's using Bluetooth. And this forced everyone to use AirPlay, where it would really have a good stream and it would sound as good as they wanted it, because they knew they weren't going to win the assistant battle. So they had to win on music.
No.
But like now is the point where you enable that Bluetooth, like just turn that thing on.
And right. I think at this point they could just look at the sales numbers and be like, okay, it's not, this isn't working out. We're not making money off of that. I think it would definitely help to get a price reduction, but I've seen it like on sale everywhere for $250. Or at least I think you've talked about before, just smaller versions of it. You know, not everyone needs the speaker to blow the house down and shake the walls. You know, some people might just want the digital assistant, and that's it. But when it comes to the Pro headphones...
Do they really just want a Siri box?
maybe not, but at least something cheaper.
Yeah.
At least start there. I'm not saying get Google Home Mini cheap. I'm just saying get reasonably more in the price range of what a smart speaker is worth to people. Because, you know, the Google Home Max has the Google Assistant, but that's not selling great either. So it's more of an assistant battle than just sound and who sounds the best. But I imagine Apple Pro headphones, as we were talking about, it would probably be a smart move given the flop of the HomePod to include that Bluetooth. I wouldn't expect a headphone jack, despite all these other companies doing it. But What I think it would be good at is showing people and kind of putting to rest the argument of Bluetooth audio sucks or Bluetooth audio isn't as good as transferring. If they started, because, you know, obviously compared to AirPods, the over-ears could be a lot larger and support maybe higher frequency chips or higher Bluetooth support. Maybe even ship them with something like W3 chips that can support really, really high bitrate audio, and that they could advertise that to professionals as like a here's the reason we're moving towards wireless, even in the pro game. And if you're doing audio engineering, there could be options out there. I think that would be a great angle.
And then they only charge via Lightning. Everything else goes to USB-C, but those only.
Oh man, you just gave me another headache. Now it's like which port do they stick with? I hope they could find a way to do it inductively. I know that would be near impossible. Like
with
line
an inductive
up
head charger, like an inductive head.
Yeah. Well, no, they've got. You've seen those headphones that like charge on a dock when you rest them. I don't know, something like that. If you're gonna pay, I'm sure this thing's gonna be $400. Might as well include a little charge stand of some kind. I could see it.
Apple headphones edition. They're like ceramic, and they come with the charging thing.
Now, whenever I bring up the over-ear headphone argument, people are always like, but they own Beats.
Yeah.
And those are – do you consider that the same thing?
No, I don't think Apple – I think Apple considers Beats legacy atoms that they put on shelves.
Yeah. I find it bizarre that they were releasing those Studio 3s that still charge via micro USB.
I don't think they put like,
I found that
– It's like so minimal backwards. Sustainable effort, I think, in the Beat line right now.
Yeah, it's like, look, it has a W1 chip, so it's really easy to pair to your iPhone, but it won't charge with your iPhone charger. It's so hypocritical. But anyway, Mr. Ritchie, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming on the Tech Podcast, and I really appreciate your time today.
Oh, thank you. This was a blast. I really appreciate you asking. It's so much fun.
Good. I'm glad we got to talk and interact finally in person, because people have been asking for a while. Now we can put it to rest.
Awesome.
Anywho, have a great rest of your day.
You too, sir. Thank you.
Bye-bye.